Thank you so much, and good afternoon. It's really a great honor and a great pleasure to see you all today and to be able to speak to you, because I know that the Oxford Union has really been a platform for free speech and for open debate for almost 200 years. And for me to be able to speak to you is really an honor, because free speech and open society is what NATO is there to defend. That's our core value, is to defend open and free societies. And I would also like to tell you that there are many alumni from Oxford that have, and people who have been members of this union for many years, that have served in NATO for many years. One general called Wesley Clark. He was our supreme Allied commander for some years, and he is an Oxford Union member. And also my assistant secretary general sitting there, Patrick Turner, he is responsible for operations, and he's a member of the union. He studied here, and he told me just now that he studied medieval history and medieval war, and then he started to work for NATO, which was, I should say, not only good news. So my task, or what I will do today, is that I will try to be brief, not too long, and to share with you some reflections on NATO and how NATO is adapting to a new and more demanding security environment. And after that, I'm happy to take questions and answer. So to have time for that, I'll try to be brief, not covering all the issues, but at least pointing out some of the main challenges we face as an alliance today. And NATO's core task, being a military and a political alliance, is to defend and protect all allies, 28 member states from Europe and US and Canada. And we do so by protecting and defending each other while standing together, based on the principle or the idea of one for all and all for one. And this idea or this principle is enshrined in our founding treaty, the Washington Treaty, in something called Article 5, which is our collective defense clause. And the main message there is that an attack on one ally will be regarded as an attack on all allies on the whole alliance. So by standing together and promising to defend each other, we are strong, and we have been able to contribute to peace and stability in Europe for almost 70 years, and to be the strongest alliance in history, protecting all allied countries. We have done so under very different circumstances. For approximately 40 years, we did that during the Cold War, from our foundation in 1949 until the end of the Cold War, with the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, and then later the dissolution of the Soviet Union. But during the Cold War, we had a big confrontation between NATO, the United States on one side, and then the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact on the other side. And we successfully were able to deter the Soviet Union, and the Cold War ended without any shot being fired. And we started after the end of the Cold War to try to build a partnership with Russia. We enlarged more and more of those countries that were previously members of the Warsaw Pact. They became NATO members. And people started also to ask whether we needed NATO anymore, because the reason why we existed to confront the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact didn't exist anymore. But then we soon discovered that it was still a reason to keep NATO as a strong alliance. because we saw that we had instability around our borders, close to NATO allies. First in the Balkans, where we had a civil war in the 1990s, or several wars in the 1990s, and NATO moved into Bosnia-Herzegovina with a big military operation. We went into Kosovo to preserve or to end the war and to preserve the peace and stability in the Balkans. That was, of course, important for our own security, because the fighting and the civil war we saw in the Balkans was also a direct threat to NATO allied countries. Then we moved into, and then we conducted a big military operation in Afghanistan after attacks on the United States, 9/11. We have been fighting piracy off the Horn of Africa, conducted airstrikes in Libya, and we have done what we in the NATO language call crisis management, or projecting stability beyond our borders, because when our neighbors are stable, then we are more secure. So for about 25 years, we didn't focus so much on collective defense in Europe, because the Soviet Union was not there. We didn't see a real threat coming from Russia. And we focused on crisis management, projecting stability beyond our borders, Afghanistan, the Balkans, and other places in the world. Then the world changed again with a more assertive Russia, with Russia using force first in Georgia, then later on in 2014 against Ukraine, illegally annexing Crimea. And then NATO was called upon again, and then we are now faced with the double challenge of both continuing to project stability beyond our borders, with actually more instability, more violence close to NATO borders, Iraq, Syria, ISIL, North Africa, and Afghanistan is still a challenge for us. So we have to continue to do crisis management, project stability beyond our borders, but at the same time, we have to do more collective defense in Europe. So we have, in a way, not the luxury of choosing either crisis management beyond our borders or collective defense in Europe. We have to do both at the same time. And that's exactly what NATO now is doing. We are adapting NATO to a new and different world. We are increasing our strength in Europe. We have implemented the biggest reinforcement to our collective defense since the end of the Cold War. We have increased the readiness and the responsiveness of our forces. We have tripled the size of something we call the NATO Response Force, a force which is able to reinforce to deploy quickly. And then we have also, for the first time, deployed forces, or we are in the process of deploying forces to the eastern part of the alliance, with battle groups in the three Baltic countries and to Poland, and also increased presence in the southeast of the alliance. We do this because for us it is, of course, the core responsibility is to continue to provide the necessary deterrence to prevent the war, not to provoke a war, and we have adapted to a more assertive Russia, being responsible for aggressive actions in Ukraine. The important thing to remember is that what NATO does is defensive, it is proportionate, and we don't want a new Cold War. We don't seek confrontation with Russia, and we therefore keep the challenge for political dialogue open with Russia. And we are not strengthening our defense because we want to fight the war, but we are delivering strong deterrence because we know that that's the best way to prevent a war. We are, at the same time, we are also now starting to increase defense spending, because this has a cost. We decided at our summit in Wales in 2014 that we needed to invest more in our defenses. Some countries already meet the NATO target of spending 2% or more on defense. The UK is among those countries, the United States is another. But most of the NATO allies do not spend 2%. They spend less than 2% of GDP on defense. So one of my, or perhaps my main priority since I became Secretary General of NATO back in 2014, has been to urge member allies to invest more in defense. The good news is that they have actually started to do so. After many years of decline, defense spending has started to increase, and there is a long way to go. There is still much to do, but at least it is a good thing to see that more and more allies understand that they have to invest more in our security when times are changing and when we see a more challenging and demanding security environment. In addition to doing more on collective defense in Europe, increasing our presence in the eastern part of the alliance, we have also stepped up our efforts to fight terrorism and to stabilize our neighborhood. We continue in Afghanistan, our biggest military operation ever. We support the efforts of the coalition fighting ISIL. We train Iraqi officers. We provide support with our AWACS surveillance planes to British to planes from UK and from the United States and from other countries conducting airstrikes over Syria and Iraq against Daesh or ISIL. And we also work with other countries in the region like Jordan and Tunisia to help them being able to fight terrorism and to stabilize their own or to maintain their own countries as stable countries in the region. We are also present in the Mediterranean. We have deployed ships to the Aegean Sea to help cut the lines of illegal trafficking over the Aegean Sea. The reason why I tell you all this is just to illustrate that NATO has been able to adapt and to change. The world has changed, so NATO has changed. And we are doing both collective defense in Europe, but we step up at the same time our efforts to stabilize our neighborhood. And that's perhaps the most important thing, is that NATO has proven again and again that when the security environment changes, we are also able to change. We are changing the way we are delivering our core task, but our core task remains exactly the same, that by standing together, by being strong, and by defending each other, we make sure that all allies are safe, and by that also preserving peace and stability in Europe and in North America. So for NATO, it is important to continue to be united, and that's the most important strength of our alliance. I will stop there to make sure that we have time for some questions. Thank you so much.